Haley Strickler is an AAC Services Coordinator for Tech Owl at the Institute on Disabilities at Temple University. She's received both her Bachelor and Master of Arts in Speech, Language, and Hearing Science from Temple University. Haley is a Pennsylvania and New Jersey licensed and American Speech, Language, Hearing Association certified speech language pathologist. She and I are going to do a deep dive into using other words and how caregivers and well-meaning parents may be censoring their children. And the fact that if an individual uses an AAC, even though you may think they don't need language, you could really be doing them a disservice. This is going to be part of my series on how to protect individuals with disabilities. It may not be a very long series. I just want to get the word out there that there's just some really staggering statistics. One of the things that Haley said during our conversation was there was a 2003 study that AAC users, out of 40 adult participants, 48% suffered abuse and less than 25% reported it. And it was a 1994 study that women with disabilities were 2 to 6 times more likely to suffer abuse. I mean, these are scary, scary numbers. And 2022, I don't imagine things have gotten better. So I just really want to get people thinking about, are we inadvertently censoring our children, our caregivers, keeping people from having full access to their words and their opinions and their voice? And if they are, what can we do about it? So let's dive in and listen in on this conversation I had with Haley Strickler. Welcome, everybody. Today, I want to give everybody a heads up that we are going to be talking about some topics that may be triggering or may be offensive, in addition to some salty language that may or may not occur. I've given Haley permission to cuss if it's appropriate, if what we are talking about it comes into play. We're not just going to do it willy-nilly, but we're also going to be talking about body parts, private parts, and things of that nature, because this is going to be part of the series I'm doing on how to help those who do not use words to communicate, commonly referred to, I believe, as nonverbal, how to help them protect themselves and how families can help protect the individual. So Haley, thank you for joining me. I've read your bio and intro ahead of time, but I'm really looking forward to this. I did hear about you first from the Loma podcast. I encourage people to check out the episode you did with Kim. I thought you did a phenomenal job, and thank you for joining me.
No, thank you for having me. This is my favorite topic to talk about, so I love any opportunity I get to kind of share this message and discuss this with other folks and have other folks learn about it too. So great opportunity.
Awesome. Can we start maybe at almost basement level? What is an AAC and what does it mean if somebody is an AAC user?
So AAC stands for Augmentative and Alternative Communication. So typically those are, we refer to them as, like, AAC is the phrase for the devices or the strategies that a person might use to communicate. Typically, someone who's an AAC user might be what we call nonverbal or non-speaking. It kind of depends on the person and which is their preferred identity term to use. But some folks are even semi-speaking, or maybe they prefer to be referred to as semi-verbal. So there can be kind of a big spectrum or a range of people with communication needs. Sometimes young children who are born with disabilities, maybe they have autism, developmental disabilities, that's preventing them from producing oral speech, they would benefit from an AAC device. But also somebody maybe later in life who had a stroke or a traumatic brain injury, or even maybe like cancer within their throat. Sometimes people who are laryngectomies, they might decide to use AAC to replace or supplement any existing speech. So it can be really useful to anybody. I usually like to give the example of Stephen Hawking. Most people know of him or have seen him. He's a very famous AAC user. I believe he had ALS. And so that's a degenerative disease. And he lost his ability to speak, but used that computerized system to replace his speech later in life. So it can be something as complex as that system. I want to say he used maybe an infrared thing on his glasses. I could be wrong. That technology does exist. Could be something like eye gaze on a computer screen that someone's using to select words or to type. But it can also be iPad-based systems where you select images. I even have some clients I support who use picture cards. I have one gentleman who he's in his 30s and uses a deck of 200 picture cards.
Wow.
And he knows where to find each and every one, and that's how he communicates. But AAC can also be something that everyone uses too. You don't just have to have a disability or identify as someone with a disability. We use AAC when we use gestures or sign language, or when we're texting and using emojis or sending an email. Those are all forms of AAC too.
So that's very helpful. And I love the expansion into how we use it in everyday life and may not be thinking of it, because I think it helps destigmatize and just really normalize the idea that we're all doing it. It's just one more tool that individuals with disabilities have that we're using in our own lives, no different than that slope on a curb that was really designed for somebody who uses a wheelchair, but we're using it if we're taking a heavy load or something on a suitcase or something.
Yeah, absolutely. And I say too that AAC is something everyone can use, just because, you know, a lot of us who do use speech as our primary mode of communication, we kind of take it for granted, and that can, you know, go away. So if you imagine when you've lost your voice, when you're sick, that's really hard to communicate. And we use a form of AAC then in that moment. Usually you might scribble down a note for a family member, or you might resort to gesturing to something. So again, it's something that everyone really uses. And I usually always tell my clients and my families that just because we're using maybe a device or another strategy, it doesn't mean we're taking away from your other forms of communication. You're always going to use what's the quickest and the best for you. So if that means a thumbs up, that's okay. You don't need to go say it on your device too, but you have that option if you need it.
Very cool. Yeah. When you're saying that, it reminds me of like Google Translate, right? If you're trying to talk to somebody in a different language, sometimes it's just faster to type it out and let Google Translate and be the voice.
I always tell people too that learning AAC is like learning a new language. It does take a while, especially if it's one of these really robust symbol-based systems. Like if your first language is English, you may be working on developing your language skills, or you might be pretty proficient in your language skills, but now we're adding something else and it's like handing someone a dictionary in Spanish. It's going to take you a while to learn it. You got to see it in action. That dictionary is only going to do so much. You got to practice and use it. And that's the same with these devices too.
Thank you for that analogy. The other thing that I've learned listening to LOMA podcasts and doing the research on AAC is there's often a gap that people who are using an AAC may take longer to respond if they have to type out a whole sentence. I mean, sometimes they'll have pre-programmed sentences or responses, but other times they have to type out their thoughts or something. I mean, so it's not unusual for a longer than air quotes normal gap, right?
Yeah, one of the things, especially when maybe I do a lot of presentations and work with families and support people of AAC users and other folks with disabilities. And one of the things, like, we go over like AAC etiquette, and it's always give the person extra time to respond. They might need that extra time to process what you're saying. And then they might need that also that extra time to formulate that response, because it does depend on the type of system that they might be using. And also if someone has a complex body, then that might also, you know, impact how long it takes for them to get their message across. And sometimes if you only have, you know, or if you don't have a pre-programmed kind of quick fire to use on your device, you're going to have to maybe go into your keyboard or put each word together. Some people use a thing called scanning. So if you think of just like a grid, like your keyboard, it essentially, the device or the computer is going to scan through each row of that keyboard. And then once you get to the row that you want, now it's going to go through each column to get to that letter. And if the one you want's all the way down in the bottom, it's going to take you a while to get there. And that might not even be the word that you were or phrase you were looking for. It might be just the button to get to the next page of the word. And so it's sometimes you just have to wait as a listener. And I'm a speech therapist. I like to talk a lot. So that's really hard for me. So sometimes I just, you know, you have to be quiet, give people the opportunity to get their message across. And another thing that, like, for AAC etiquette too, is usually for most people, they don't like you to finish what they're saying. Of course, it's always up to personal preference. Some people don't mind, but usually, like, when in doubt, I say, this is your first time meeting someone who uses AAC, give them that time to complete their whole sentence, just because that's polite. Nobody wants to be cut off in the middle.
Awesome. Yeah. And it's similar to, I guess, to what you hear when somebody has a stutter, or, you know, if somebody has a processing delay, you know, you want to give them time to think out their thoughts. And I'm from New England, so I'm retired Navy. I talk fast, and it's almost painful sometimes where I have to remind myself, just wait it out. You know, I'm also, I think, a verbal processor where I just talk sometimes just to you know, work a thought out. So it's helpful to hear the AAC etiquette. And I wanted to bring you on specifically today because it was news to me that AAC users may not have access to all the same vocabulary that you and I do. And not because they don't know the words, but because the words aren't available on their device, which to me is a pretty significant difference or pretty significant thing you need to be aware of, right? Can you talk a little bit more about that, about what the device is programmed to do, or well, you know the best way to approach what I'm asking, I hope.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a couple different ways to approach that. And there's, like, kind of a couple different problems that we see. So if you're somebody who can program your own device, or you have literacy skills, you're going to be able to say more of what you want without having to have a support person assist you with programming or adding that word to your system. So if you think of these devices or apps that someone might use, some of them are keyboard based. If you have the keyboard and you can spell or use predictive text or a combination of those things, you're going to be able to say more of what you want quicker and easier. But if you need that assistance, or someone needs to add a word and it's not there, how are you going to ask them to add it if you don't have a way to do it? It's almost like you have to kind of wait for someone else to just assume, oh, you should have access to this. Because a lot of people with disabilities, sometimes they might not have had that opportunity to develop those literacy skills at no fault of their own. It's unfortunately just sometimes how the school system is. And they might not have even had the opportunity to use a device too. And they might not know that some of the words that they need to be able to talk about aren't on there until they need it and it's not there. But I always say, well, how are you going to ask for it if you don't already have it? And I don't have an answer to that one, unfortunately. But a lot of the devices too that are on the market, I would say in the last year or so, they've been doing a lot better job with coming out and having this more, like, robust vocabulary, not just for, like, curse words and profanity, like fun words, but more of those words for, like, abuse or body part vocabulary. Some words don't even have, like, the word butt, like B-U-T-T on the device. So someone might be able to use B-U-T, that form of the word, to represent something else, or maybe bottom. But you have to also then be able to kind of have that flexibility, or know, hey, I can quick use this word. And I wouldn't be able to think of that on the spot too. So, you know, how can I expect someone else to do that? It's a lot easier if you have that vocabulary for those words to be stored rather than having to get creative. And they should have access to it.
I mean, and this is all new to me. Mm-hmm. And it came to light during Kim's podcast. And it also came to light because I've been doing other research, and the passing of the recent Roe versus Wade decision, you know, meaning where I think it's 22 or 23 states now have made abortions illegal, and the ridiculously high number of women who have disabilities who are suffering abuse. And not that men don't get abused too. With women, the number is staggeringly high. And then if we're not giving them the ability to, one, share that they're being abused, two, identify their abuser, it's scary to me, you know, and I think it would be scary to anybody that has a loved one or knows a woman.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pulling up. I have like just some quick data here. So I knew it, like I'd have it. But there are several studies that like looked into this. And one is by Sobsey from 1994. And even then, they said that people with severe disabilities were 2 to 6 times more likely to experience abuse. And that was in 1994. And what we know between then and now is that more people are coming forward. Survivors are coming forward now. They have platforms to be able to speak about that. So I would think that there's a possibility, unfortunately, that these numbers are probably higher now that we're having more people self-advocate and speak about their experiences. There's another one that's from 2003, and this specifically looked at ACE users. This is by Diane Bryan Carey and Bev Franz from 2003. And they said that they had about 40 adult participants who were ACE users, and 45% of them experienced crime or abuse, and only 28% of those people reported that to the police.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So we do see that individuals with disabilities are victims of abuse more often. And a lot of self-advocates, disability advocates, and AAC users themselves, you know, have made the comment that if they can't report it, it's almost like they're a target victim. Because if you can't report it, how is anyone going to know that it happened?
Right. And then going back to your earlier statement, if it's not programmed into the device already, how do you ask for it? Especially if you don't have the words, if nobody's taught you, you know, this is what a vagina is, this is what a penis is, this is, you know, this is what, I don't know that you would necessarily go into rape or molestation, but I do think you have to give people the ability to know what that means. And maybe I'm oversimplifying, Haley, this is why I wanted to talk to you.
I think too, like, we know that most students in the United States, whether they have disabilities or not, aren't getting adequate sexual health education in the school system. So there's a huge gap there. But then students with disabilities and AAC users, they're going to be getting that even less. I remember once when I was in grad school, and I got to shadow a sexual health class back at my own high school, and it was for the life skills students. And I remember they were reading something, and the only thing that was read was sex is when sperm and egg collide or something like that. And that was like the exact wordage. And I just remember that sperm, egg collide. And then that was it. They moved on to something else completely. And I was like, that's interesting. But now, like, you know, 10 years later, that's stuck with me. Right. That's all these students got to experience. And then I think, well, what did I get to experience? And I was like, well, I don't think I learned that much more either. Right. In the school system. So, and I believe that there weren't any AAC users in that particular class. So I think, well, what are the students who are using AAC? What are they experiencing too? Are they getting that same, even though it's the bare minimum, are they getting that same bare minimum? I'm not sure. I'm not there. I would say that some of the adults that I work with, who they've been out of school for a while and they're just getting a communication device, maybe now in their 30s or 40s, and their parents still are like, oh, well, they don't need to talk about that. Like, and I'm like, yeah, well, they're 40 years old. They should be able to talk about their body parts if they need to.
And
they,
urges, you know, or anything that's happening to them.
Yes. Or... yes. And I think that there's that big gap in education with that. And I think, like, it starts at that good sexual health education for everyone. Everyone of all abilities should be getting that so that they can talk about their body parts, and it shouldn't be shameful. And they should be able to then know when to report when something's wrong.
But what age though, Haley, at what age should parents be talking to the IEP team and saying, hey, we really want this included? And I don't know how you would include it. But I mean, you know, you need to bring it up, right? I mean, it shouldn't be 40 and, oh, here's the word for anus on your AAC device. I mean.
Yeah. And I think it's like, again, I'm looking at my norms. I come prepared.
No, this is why I need your help.
It's because there's so much information, it's hard to know off the top of your head too. But they, you know, they're saying, and these are, I believe this is out of Canada, one of their, it's their teachingsexualhealth.ca website, and they have a lot of information by age group of like what you should expect for children and like to understand and also be able to kind of talk about. And by between 2 and 3 years, you should be able to kind of identify and label those body parts. So then being able to label is like to point it out, but identifying is in a way, or being able to label is being able to talk about it. Identifying is being able to kind of point it out. So around 2 and 3 years, I would say that though, you know, we should have some of those words on a child's device if they're starting off. Of course, if someone's, you know, they're developing language and they're, we're only really working on maybe like say words like eat and stop and go, maybe, and we, if a child can only, you know, maybe they're working with using 4 words at a time, like they have, are kind of building that skill. I'm not going to necessarily replace a word like more or stop with butt or penis, because we can really only use those in certain contexts, but it can, maybe I can put it somewhere else on the device. Maybe I have an extra page, because 2 and 3 year olds, they do like talking about those things. I mean, potty jokes, butt jokes are the favorite topic of the little ones. And it's also a way to get them to engage and use the device and explore it, because it's funny, but then it's also teaching them something that's important from a young age as well.
And then you would want to, I would imagine you'd want to put the slang in there. So if they hear somebody say it, they can, they have the ability to say, what does this mean?
Yes.
Or somebody said this to me, or, you know, something else, right? I mean.
Yeah. And I think too, it goes into the idea as there's some decisions need to be made about the, you know, vocabulary for like a children's a child's access method. Like if they're still, again, building language and working on that, we might not necessarily want to take away other important words to add this, but I think that there's ways that we can program or set up a device to also be able to include it too. It's a hard answer. You kind of have to do it. Everyone's different. Everyone's device is different. So it's kind of a know your audience type of thing to make those decisions. But I would say, like, I'm not going to necessarily say, oh, all 2-year-olds need the F word on their talker, but you know, that's kind of a decision that, well, if mom and dad are saying that in the house a lot, like, you know, is there something else that we can use, or can we have a variation of something like that for that child? Because if that child was using their oral speech to communicate, they probably would be repeating their parents. They're not going to know what they're saying, but they're going to say it.
And, you know, even words that aren't taboo or cuss words, I think about what the psychologist and I were talking about how individuals are groomed, and the, you know, adding the word secret to the AAC device, which isn't something you would normally think about, but it would be helpful if they had a way of saying, somebody asked me to keep a secret, you know, and I know that's not a traditional taboo word or cuss word, but I do think it's a word maybe it's not included on AACs very often, especially not for children.
Yeah, I would have to think. I personally don't know if I've ever looked to see if the word secret is on any of like the common devices that I, you know, typically use or my clients use. And I'm sure that there, if I did like a quick search of some of them, I might be able to find it, but it's probably buried and it's difficult to find. Like you do see with a lot of these other words as well, they're buried under multiple layers of other words to get to. And even I've had someone once asked me if the word hate should be on their child's device. And they said, well, we don't use that word in our home, so I think I should take it off of the device. And I said, well, we can't really remove that word from somebody's brain or from their, you know, what they're thinking about. Why should we remove it just because we can from an iPad? Like we can press the delete button. You can't delete it from somebody's knowledge or their experience. And this child was like 15, 16. Ish, maybe in that age range. And he definitely has heard the word hate before. It might not have been at home, but he's probably heard it at school. And even if he does use it at home where we don't use that word, that's a good teaching opportunity.
I mean, I imagine the same could be said for, and we're going a little far astray of protecting children from predators, but I mean, I think it's still protecting to protect children, racial slurs. I mean, we can say we don't want them using them, but if you're a child of color or a Muslim or a different LGBTQ, it's hard to say you're never going to experience a slur.
Yeah, and I've done some presentations about this, and that's one thing that I've talked about. Like, I personally will exclude those words from my slides because that's kind of where I draw my boundary. But they're, I think our like 10-year-olds use slurs, like ability slurs, so like the R word and a sexuality slur. So I think they use one of like the F word for that, and that like showed up on the list for 10-year-olds. When I pr present about that, I exclude that because I talk about it, but I'm like, I just don't want this word blown up right behind my head because that's where I draw my line. But for someone who's using an AAC device, especially if they are a person of color or they're part of the LGBTQIA community, they need to be able to report that. What if one of their family members or a caregiver or somebody, another student at school uses that word against them? How are they going to be able to tell someone that
Or
they've
even not against them,
experienced
but in
that?
their hearing, if they're using it, that's probably not something that you want. I cannot think of a good reason why anybody would need to use a derogatory term ever. I mean, so if you
No.
hear somebody using it, whether it's directed to you or not, I think it's important to be able to share because maybe that person, I think sometimes we forget our children with disabilities or young adults or adult children with disabilities are people too. They're more than just their disabilities. So they could feel empathy and they could feel for somebody who's being insulted. They could feel for somebody who's being yelled at or cussed at, even if it's not them. And they may need the words to process that with somebody to say, hey, so and so said this and it made me feel like this. And maybe I'm oversimplifying or casting too wide a net, but I feel like we need to give them the opportunity to talk through stuff like this.
Absolutely. And two, if they don't have access to that those words, how are they going to be able to talk about it? And I think then people are always like, well, I don't want to just put this on, my child's device, because then what if they're using it? I think the example Kim gave on her podcast was, well, we don't want to be screaming that at grandma's birthday party. And I'm like, no, we definitely don't, but that isn't a that's a very good teaching opportunity. And I think too, like I think that most children and teenagers experience using words or name calling, even if it's not a slur, just name calling it or doing something at some time at somebody. And that's an important part of learning empathy and learning that you shouldn't do that and how you what you do impacts other people. That I think that's even though it's not a fun time, it's part of that human experience and everyone should have the ability to learn that. I mean, I don't want to say everyone should experience trauma. You shouldn't. I wish everyone went through life without that,
But that's not
but
the world we live in. I mean,
it's not. And we need to be able to have those words to communicate what happened and how we felt. And if we don't, how are we going to also then be able to learn and process and, speak with others about our experiences and what we're feeling? I think those are, that was a really good point. And sometimes even like words for feelings and stuff, we don't necessarily consider those taboos, but somebody might only have happy and sad on their device, but they're experiencing so many other feelings and emotions, and they need those words to be able to express that and help them process and talk about it.
And as we're talking, I think about even if you limit their gender pronouns, because we know, well, we don't know, the studies I've read are showing that if your individuals on the spectrum more frequently experience gender dysphoria. So if you're only putting the gender pronouns that they were, assigned at birth, then you may be again limiting their communication, limiting the ability for them to share how they feel, what they're trying to process. And I'm obviously showing my ignorance of an AUC here. I don't know how it would be laid out. I'm sure you would have all access to all the pronouns, but there maybe people are stopping them when you're referring to themselves as she, her, if they were born male. You know what I mean?
Yeah, a lot of the devices, like they have a wide variety of pronouns built in. Several of the major devices are kind of, if they haven't already, they're in the process, I believe, of coming out with like features to have a more variety of like neopronouns, things like that, to be more inclusive for people. But if you're not able to program your own device or change those or something, or you need that assistance and somebody doesn't support that, it doesn't support your identity or your transition, they could remove that. And you then you have no way of putting it back. And it's almost a way for people to kind of deny someone the ability to express their identity and experience their identity.
So to tie that into how parents can help, assuming parents are supportive, and I think most parents are, when their child starts working with caregivers or agencies, maybe periodically take the device and review it or work, review the device with the individual. I hate saying take somebody's communication device away from them. That's not what I mean. But review it with the individual and make sure that they have everything that, that the individual had, that what you have now is what you had going into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, as a support person, as a family member or a therapist working with somebody, it's also good to kind of, we also have to kind of remove ourselves from the situation and our own perspectives. And that's, of course, always easier said than done. But making sure that we're giving people, this is essentially their voice that you have just free access to change. And I think doing those spot checks with somebody, monthly or yearly, or hopefully more than yearly, but whenever you can, just to make sure that that new vocabulary or those words that they want is on there. That's really important. When I'm working with families, I often say, well, sometimes maybe we have a icon that when they press it, it talks about what they did this weekend. Well, if we don't update that every week or so, it's going to be talking about what they did a month ago. And that stinks. They did so much more. And we have to update it for, there's a new store down the street that they want to go to, or there's a new classmate that they want to be able to talk about. So we want to make sure we're updating those things, but we also then want to make sure we're updating things that are more relevant. So especially like for teenagers, if they're going through puberty and now they need to be able to talk about that, or if there's new slang that, they're hearing on TikTok or something like that, we want to be able to put that in a device too, especially like the slang words. What's the cool new phrase that changes probably every week? So we want to keep up with that.
And make sure they have an ability to talk you through what they're seeing if they're looking at porn, because teenagers do it. I mean, it's going to happen.
Yeah. And being able to talk about those things too. And I think sometimes it's just, I'm not a parent. So again, it's probably easier said than done, but you got to remove the parent hat and just kind of, we're just putting words in the computer or in the device in the system. And then we can have a discussion later, I guess, as a parent, as a support person, or as a therapist, like, we're not going to talk about porn in the middle of the school day. That's not okay.
Right. Or words that you may hear are not appropriate for conversations.
Yeah.
Even in R-rated movies, watch a Samuel L. Jackson movie, right? I mean.
Yeah. And I think it's hard because it's also that conversation of parents and, people support people. You want to protect a person and, you don't want to set them up for failure. But a little bit of failure with learning some of these things that are in social situations, that's part of the human experience. We all say things at inopportune times and we have to experience the consequence of it.
Right. And then the other side of that coin is, you should be talking to your, to the individual that you're caring for or child, and explaining, hey, if a caregiver is trying to, touch your penis, touch your vagina, touch your breasts, that's not okay. Mm-hmm. And explain when it's okay and when it's not okay. Explain the difference between a medical procedure and what have you. Again, I'm not a clinician, but taking into the ability of the individual to understand based on their emotional age, not necessarily their chronological age. Is that right? Or would you say it differently?
I think it depends on the person. And I think that's a hard conversation to have. I like to say that I'm pretty, I'm trying to figure out how I want to word this.
Well, you're not going to offend me.
It's a hard.
This is why I ask, because I want to be educated.
This is one of those situations too, where I think it's a know your audience. Okay. When I work with people and communicate with people, I treat them their age.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes
sense. But it's also a know your audience. If I'm talking with somebody and I know that my raunchy joke, just like you would with anyone, didn't go over well, or they had, no idea what I was talking about, that's okay. Then, you adjust your speech accordingly. But I think If, you know, somebody's in their 50s, I'm not going to treat them like they're six. I'm going to give them that opportunity to be spoken to as an adult and be given that language. That's like my one example. And I say this story, and like, this was my first experience as a graduate student, speech therapy, learning this. This gentleman was 40 something, and he wanted to be able to say, "I shit my pants" on his device. And that was like his little comedy catchphrase. And he never did, but he just loved to say that. I think for the reaction of, you know,
the shock
the
value,
staff
sure.
And stuff. Yeah. And so I was like, hey, instead of typing it out, let's do a quick phrase. Cause you say this every day and we got other stuff to talk about. And then you can say it more than once. And so right. He loved that idea. We added a quick button so he could hit it and be able to say that. And then the next day when he went to go hit it to say it to me, it said, "I pooped my pants." And the look on his face was like, excuse me, like I did that. I'm like, I didn't do that. It turned out I think one of the, somebody on staff or something like that changed the word because shit was inappropriate. Well, he's old enough to be my dad. I think if he wants to say shit, he can.
Or
who
any
am
other
I
word,
to dictate?
Yeah. I mean,
I can be like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, and it's his device. Just because we can change the button doesn't mean that we can or should. And so, like, this, I think, believe this gentleman had some sort of brain injury type of thing. And so should I be treating him different and using the word poop because, you know, he's living in like a, you know, a center and he's taking classes to kind of rebuild skills? Should I be treating him like a student just because he, you know, had this experience? Absolutely not. He
No,
deserves the opportunity to be treated like an adult. I had another incident too with one of my friends who is an AAC user, and she was so excited to show me. I think we were in like at a restaurant or something, like fast food place or something, and she was showing me some while we were waiting in line, the new like curse words she had on her device. And I remember this other woman in front of us, I'm guessing she's probably never, you know, been around someone using a device, and this was, you know, new to her. And she kept saying like, "Oh, oh," to my friend who's in her 20s. And then all of a sudden my friend hits like the F word, like fuck or something like that to show me. And the woman was like, "Oh," like, "Oh no," she wasn't expecting that. And I thought, my friend and I thought that was like so funny.
Yeah.
Like this reaction. And I know that the person didn't, it's just, she wasn't used to this. And it was, I guess, surprising to see, like, oh, this person's saying the F word. Well, of course she is.
Yeah.
She's
somebody with a disability using adult. Yeah.
Like,
I mean, why shouldn't somebody who has a disability use adult language?
Yeah. And it was our own conversation too. It was, you know, she was just showing me something and saying it. If she wasn't using a device, would that woman have thought it was okay to even like eavesdrop or watch? It was almost like that was a free pass to watch our conversation. Well, I guess she didn't like what she saw because she quick turned around, but we thought it was hilarious. But yeah, I don't know. I'm very big on everyone deserves to be treated the way that, you know, their age group. I think that I'm very dry with my humor and my therapy. And I even kind of do that with like the kids I work with. Of course, I'm not dropping F-bombs with 7-year-olds I work with, but I mean, I used to work in high schools and stuff too. And I would tell it like it is to them within, you know, limit. Yeah. There's limits, of course, but I don't like to, you know, baby or infantilize anyone. They're a teenager, they're an adult, they deserve that as long as they're comfortable with it. Some people have different interests and they're not comfortable with that kind of language, and that is okay too.
Well, it goes back to what you said, know your audience. There
yeah,
are times
absolutely.
When I'm around my military buddies that, you know, your hair's probably gonna be on fire because I don't think. But when I'm doing podcasts or I'm in a professional setting, I'm very careful about the words I use and specifically language that I use, because I don't know where somebody is with regards to how they feel about certain words, you know. And there's other words like the C word I'm just never going to say.
And they're like I have my limits. I mentioned like I won't put slurs on my slides.
Right.
I'll refer to them, but I'm not going to say that because that's where I draw my boundary. But sometimes it's also worth having the discussion with people like, hey, especially for me as somebody who assists with programming a device, I might need to open that conversation and say, hey, where is your boundary? What do you want on here? Because it's okay. Just because I'm saying you need to, you should have these words. A person also has the right to say, no, I don't want to say those words. And I can say, well, maybe what if you hear them or you want to report that? Again, if they're really not comfortable with it for whatever reason, that's okay too. But we can
that's the person, that's not the staff.
That's the person, yeah, not the staff. There was one article which was really interesting. I can't remember the title or the author, but I believe it was called like the F word in the nicest way possible. And it was, they were interviewing like caregivers and they were like, well, what is your perspective on adding these words to an adult person's device? And they asked about, you know, the different ones. And they're like, oh yeah, that's fine. Like damn was fine. Hell was fine. But then it was like, well, what about the F word? And they were like, well, we probably wouldn't put the F word, but the equivalent of it in the nicest way possible. And it's like, well, is that up to, that's you as a caregiver saying that. What if the person doesn't want to be nice? Yeah. They have the right to not be nice.
And I think it goes back to what you said about a learning opportunity where if the caregiver is truly offended by the F word or another word, then that's an opportunity for the caregiver to say, hey, Mr. Mrs., you know, so-and-so, this really bothers me. Can you not use that word around me?
Yeah.
And explain why. You know, exactly. I mean, no different than you would around, like I had, when I was in the Navy, I was with a guy who was really offended by the word dude. And I thought it was the funniest thing back then because you tell a submariner what's bothering you, guess what's going to happen? He's going to keep sticking it, you know, keep with it. But in hindsight, it was juvenile for me to, you know, for me to keep going after it. But, you know, it was, and dude's not a cuss word, but there are going to be words like that, that people find offensive for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And sharing that with an individual who is an AAC user should be the opportunity to treat them like you're equal, to treat them like another human being. And not just a disability. Little bit of a tangent, so I apologize.
No, absolutely. I think that I'm very big on that. And I know a lot of individuals who are AC users who, you know, share their experiences on social media and talk about what it's like to be an AC user. That is a lot of the information that they're saying too. Like one of my favorite quotes is by Donnie DeNome, and they are an AAC user. And this quote says, age, disability, and the discomfort of others are not reasons to deny someone the vocabulary they desperately need. And this is from Donnie's blog, which is called How Do You Symbolize Intimacy for Many AAC Programs? Not particularly well. I highly recommend anyone interested in this topic read Donnie's blog to hear more about this from someone who is an AAC user.
Can you send me that? I'll include it in the show
notes. Yeah, absolutely. And I highly recommend, I'll put this in our chat. But this blog has some great information from the perspective of an AAC user, because I'm not an AAC user. I'm coming from this perspective as a speech therapist who saw this in my practice in the field. And it's something that has stood out to me and the experiences of my students, my clients, that I want to advocate for. But, you know, there's only so much that I can say. It needs to come from AAC users themselves and their experience, and then their words are more powerful and should be taken more than me.
Yeah, and people need to listen.
Yes.
You know, I feel like too often there's this response of, oh, isn't that so cute? Oh, yeah. Condescending no, they're not a child. And thank you for correcting me on that earlier when I was asking about how to talk to them. You know, I certainly don't want to talk down to somebody, but I do think I'm just as guilty as everybody else of not giving everybody a fair shake right away. You know, I think that's part of being human.
Yeah. And I think we all do that. I know that I definitely have, and I want to open the conversation and I want to hear from AAC users and learn from them and what they have to say. And their perspectives. I've worked with a lot of AAC users and spoke with them, and even amongst their communities, some of their viewpoints and the way they want to approach these kinds of things are different or conflicting. So I think, again, it goes back to that know your audience, because not every AAC user is going to have the same perspective. I know, like we said, like the word nonverbal, I know some AAC users that's the word that they use to identify themselves. But then I know other AAC users who find that word very offensive, and they prefer to use semi-speaking, or they use a non-speaking as their preferred term, or they just prefer to be called an AAC user and not have any of those other words associated with them. And, you know, I've made that mistake. I wasn't sure like which word was their preferred one. And, you know, then they correct me and I learn from that. But it's also too, like, you never know until you open the discussion and have that honest discussion with people. And I think that's the best way we learn and share any message. But I think we can really learn from a lot of AAC users themselves.
Thank you. Haley, this has been fantastic. So I want to give a quick recap, because we covered a lot of ground. And I at the beginning, I said we were going to cover the abuse and how to protect our children. I think we did. But I'm glad we explored and went a field of that. I'm glad we went into what it meant to support AAC users in general. So as a recap, things families, what I'm understanding families can do and caregivers can do to protect the AAC users that they know or that they support is making sure the language is the words are available, and the AAC user knows how to use them or when to use them, and not just assume you're never going to need that word, because when you do need it, it's going to be too late.
I think so. I'd rather see, and again, that's my speech therapist hat. I'd rather that somebody has the word and never need to use it than, oh no, I need to say this and it's not here. Now what do I do?
I mean, can you put it in, can you create folders? Like, could you create a folder? And again, showing my ignorance, but could you create a folder under things that make me feel weird? You know, because you may not have the terminology for abuse or assault or anything like that. But if you feel weird or uncomfortable, maybe you have words in there, and that could be a folder or something.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea too. I think it depends on the person and how their system is organized. I know some AAC users have, like, they have words for advocating for themselves in specific situations, whether that is like sexual situations, romantic relationships, the doctor being able to advocate for themselves, like, you're not listening to me, or being able to talk in that moment and have those phrases or words there. But also, we can also teach, one of the big things we talk about in the field of AAC and speech therapy and working on these things is using core vocabulary, especially for folks who are also learning how to put language together, that they're working on their language and their linguistic skills as well. That maybe, because sometimes, of course, we always want to have all of the words at once, but sometimes for some folks that's not the way that they're going to learn best. And we want to make sure that we're supporting them where they're at so that they can, you know, learn how to use their device comfortably for them. So maybe we don't have the words like abuse right away, but we have other ways to be able to express that, like hurt or bad. We can use those words in combination. Like, we could say he hurt me, and putting those words together without, like, I don't have the word kick, like to say that someone kicked me, but I can use hurt in that place. Yes, it's not as, you know, detailed, it's more vague, but it still gives that person that opportunity to be able to still express what happened to
them. And then you can explore more, right? You could start, that's when you could start going into the more how, the other nouns or what have you.
Yes.
Or verbs of what may have been done. Wow.
Absolutely. Like, for example, too, we might have, like, if somebody, you know, God forbid, was being sexually abused, maybe we don't have the word, you know, assault or rape on the device right away, but we have, like, bad touch, that somebody, because a lot of times with, you know, children, that's what they learn, that this is bad, you know, bad touch. That's like one of the go-to phrases I think parents, you know, tend to use. But, you know, most five-year-olds don't really know what the word rape or molestation is, but they might know bad touch. And we can use that for somebody too, who's building their language skills without having all of these other words that maybe they're, you know, taking up, we don't want them taking up space on the device when somebody has a lot more other things that they, you know, these words have more meaning and we can use them across contexts. Because touch, we can also use in a positive thing that maybe somebody, like, especially like a child, that they, you know, they want maybe mommy to tickle them or something like that when they're playing, or they want a hug and they can request a touch. But then learning how to pair those words together, like bad or good, with it can be, you know, a really big game changer for when that child does need to report that something happened.
No, that's very enlightening. This has been awesome, Haley. I really appreciate you making the time and talking me through this. And thank you for just letting me air my ignorance. I mean, I no, appreciate it.
And I aired mine too. You know, I say that again, I'm coming from the perspective as a speech therapist who works in this field. But I think too that if this is something that folks are, you know, interested in, that they should also really explore hearing from self-advocates and AAC users themselves, because they're going to be able to speak on this issue way more than I can.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I might have the therapy approach to it, but I'm not going to have that real life experience. And the real life experience is what's really valuable and powerful with kind of spreading this message.
Absolutely. Was there anything I should have asked that I didn't ask? Anything else that you want to make sure we cover before we get off the call?
No, I don't think so. I think we kind of covered all the good bases with the direction too, because I think when we talk about like taboo topics, everybody just assumes, oh, it's fun and games, it's curse words, it's potty talk. But I think, no, that, you know, there's so much more underneath of it. So I think that was a pretty good discussion.
Well, thank you again, Haley. This has been awesome. Oh, and if people want to reach out to you, I'll make sure I add your contact information in show notes, if that's okay with you. Do you mind?
Yeah, absolutely. So they can contact me at haley.strickler@temple.edu. So okay. It's my first and last name with the period in between, @temple.edu. So I am out of Temple University, so specifically TechOwl, which is Pennsylvania's assistive technology program. And then we are part of the Institute on Disabilities at Temple University.
Very cool. Well, thank you again. This has been awesome.
No, thank you for having me. I really appreciate to talk about this. This is kind of my personal like passion topic. So I always say that my mom loves it. I'm the curse word lady. But I think that this is, you know, really important.
Awesome.
And the AAC users I work with have inspired me to try to be more of an advocate for this type of thing. So, you know, I had to go on a limb for it, but it benefits at least one person, I'm happy.
Amen. Amen. And I don't hear anybody else talking about this. I mean, and maybe just because I'm not listening in the right circles, but you know, I really wanted to get this out there.
Yeah, I went out on a limb. Like, I talk about it in my circles with, you know, the ACE users that, you know, I communicate with. And, you know, this is something we talk about all the time. And, you know, I remember it was a year ago, I was like, well, let me, I kind of want to present about this at the ATIA conference. And they were all like, yeah, go for it, do it. And so I was like, I got the approval of my small little group. And so I was like, well, this is either going to, I like to make the joke, ruin my career or be a good thing. But, you know, I got the approval from some ACE users saying like, yeah, this is important. Talk about it.
Right. No, exactly.
So, you know, if it made them happy, I was like, you know, I'm going to go for it. And it ended up being, you know, a good message to start and getting that word out there and being able to help with spreading this, and it's hopefully going to benefit a lot of people. Again, I like to talk about it. If anyone wants to talk to me, or I'm here to talk about bad words.
And she's okay with coming on podcasts.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Haley.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Haley really got me thinking. I've never used an AAC. Candidly, I don't have a lot of interaction with AAC users. I found Haley through an episode of the Loma podcast, which I'm going to have a link to in the show notes. It's episode 167. And that episode was more about using salty language and cuss words and things. I was less interested in that and more interested in really making sure we talk about AAC etiquette and helping people get an idea of what it's like to be an AAC user and what it could be like if you didn't have access to all of your words. I hope that's what you took away from this. I hope you've got a new understanding of what it means to be an AAC user. If you are supporting people who use AAC, I'm hoping you have some new ideas about how you can support them. Thanks for listening. As always, I'd love it if you leave me a review and share it with somebody. I'd also, if you have an idea for future guests, future topics, don't hesitate to reach out to me. Email me, eric@specialneedsnavigator.us. With guests, it worked best if you can make an introduction. If you can't, that's fine. It's just an introduction does tend to speed things along. Thanks for listening.